Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Scott Shepherd. I'm founder and CEO of the city's first advisors and podcast, and I'm really excited to have with you all here today to talk about digital twins and their role in cities. I'm excited to also feature Michael Oliver, who is the technical director with PTV Group. And PTV Group is our sponsor of today's episode. So welcome, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Scott. Thank you for having me.
So today's episode is really focused around the topic of shaping transports with digital twins and looking at how digital twins are being layered into urban environments through a variety of use cases, whether it's public transport, whether it's traditional traffic modeling, or whether it's new kind of future mobility schemes. And with that, we're really gonna kind of layer in the topic of why do digital twins now in 2025 matter in cities? And what are the role that Michael plays on his team, as well as what are some of the exciting innovations that PTV Group and under the Umovity umbrella are kind of bringing in terms of value to cities and some interesting use cases. So maybe Michael, if you just wanna give us just a quick highlight in terms of some of your background, what you've been working on, and then we'll just start in terms of talking about the definition of a digital twin.
Yeah, sounds good, thanks Scott. So yeah, my background, you mentioned I'm a technical director at PTV. I'm sort of increasingly more involved with the kind of the sales and commercial side of things as well at PTV, but I'm a technical person kind of at heart. So I graduated back in 2008, which seems like a long time ago now, but that was with a master's in mathematics from the University of Birmingham in England. So I've always been based in this part of the world, in the Midlands in England. After graduation, I joined a multidisciplinary engineering consultancy called Mott MacDonald, that you might be familiar with. I didn't fancy going into sort of finance or tax or any of the things that my colleagues at university were going into. Instead, I've always been interested in sort of geography and planning as well. My brother-in-law was a town planner, so thought, that sounds good. That sounds great. I'd like to do that. But then in discussion with him, he said, you know, you're a numerate kind of guy. You probably want to do transport planning instead.
So. Yes. Versus just general, urban planning.
Yeah. So I took that on board and just applied to a graduate scheme at Mott MacDonald, and they kind of also recognized the kind of the numeracy problem solving side of things, end up doing transport modeling. And complete, you know, it's one of these things in life. You end up doing something without any particular grand plan, but it's now been kind of the shape of my career, and I'm very glad to have done that. So I did that for quite a while, kind of transport modeling, which and digital models certainly play an important role in digital twins and the kind of things we'll be talking about here. I then got to know PTV Group through them being a software company and the software platforms I was using. So I joined PTV in 2015. I've just had my sort of 10-year anniversary come through. And yes, now I lead the kind of business and sales part of what PTV Group do in UK and Ireland, but also responsible for the technical aspect of what we do, because it is very sort of engineering science focused in transport modeling, transport planning. And so yes, with PTV, software company, specializing in modeling and predicting mobility. And that's, that is a key part of what is a digital twin. So, there are, I'll get into it. We'll get into the definition and the different things that make up a digital twin. Predicting the real world and making a change to it is a key part. And in terms of digital twins and why it sort of matters to cities is digitization is happening, and there are many benefits just through digital transformations in cities around all kinds of aspects of them, certainly around transport as well. And I think digital twins are the natural progression of that. As more information and systems become digitized, it gives you the potential to leverage that to bring greater efficiencies, greater resilience, and potentially even, and this is the exciting part, maybe we'll end up closing on this, but it gives you the potential to implement policies in real time, and that's super exciting.
Boy, you must have taken the words right out of my mouth. I was going to talk about the policy side and the implementation for decision makers and being actionable. So that's music to my ears, Michael. And great to hear that you were once, or your family's also kind of has pedigree in urban and town planning, as well as myself, a master's in urban planning. So I think we have much to cover today. But with that, let's get started here. And our first kind of official topic is around what is a digital twin. So maybe if you can provide us, for the audience here, kind of a simple definition and example, but if you want to take this any specific direction, that's fine, and just set the foundation for what we're talking about, and we can spend maybe as much time on that as possible.
Sure. Yeah, we can get cracking with it. So, digital twins are a broad topic, and there are probably many, many definitions of it, and different people will define them in different ways. But the one that I quite like is that a digital twin is a virtual representation of a physical object or a system that uses data to provide. To create a kind of a mirror of that real world object or system. So it kind of it's representing it in real time, and that has benefits on its own. But also it uses prediction and simulation to forecast what's going to happen in real time. So what might happen in the next half an hour, or whatever time horizon, and using that information to then change the real world. So you've got the real world, you've got the digital representation of it, the virtual representation of it, linked with real-time data, and then being able to change the real world. And of course, you've got that feedback loop, and that's what makes a digital twin. So you mentioned trying to create a simple example. So I think you can do this with pretty much any connected device, essentially. So I'm here in my office, and it's actually the garage. So I'm not based in London, so a garage is something that exists. I can assure people that I'm not based down south. But I've got my office here in a garage because my daughter now is doing an online school, so she of course gets the main office in the house, and I've got this cold room out here in the back garden. But yes, it gets cold. It's in the garage, so I need to keep it warm. I've got a radiator in here, so I've got this kind of radiator sitting there. It's electric, so I can give it a target temperature. And it's got a sensor built into it. And once I switch it on, it will sense what's happening in the room, in the real world. And then if the temperature is too low, it switches it on. And then when it gets the temperature, it switches it on. So that's an example of a physical asset that's got a control system built in. So it's sensing the real world, it's controlling itself. And that's the idea of a control system is an important part within a digital twin. Of course, that's not a digital twin in itself. There's no virtual representation. There's no digital representation of that. What I do have is an app. So I've got an app. Many people have these things, whatever brand of things you're using, you've got these things. You can see what's happening with that device. But on my phone, I've got an app that tells me, okay, this is the current radiator temperature, the temperature of the room. I can switch it on or off. But now in that app, I've got a digital representation or a virtualized representation of that system, the radiator and the room. So is that within that app, is that a digital twin? Because we're kind of getting into that territory now. I would say at that point it's not really, because it's got the digital representation. There is a control system, so and it can I can use the app to change the real world. What it's really missing is that simulation and that prediction part. So, you know, what I could do is write to the owners of this app and propose a change to the software on it, and say, well, why don't you layer in, say, some artificial intelligence onto this app? So the phone knows where I am. It's got my location. It's got my calendar because I've got sort of Microsoft Outlook on there. So what I would do is say in the morning, I would maybe half an hour before I go in here, I'll use my phone and switch the radiator on so it's ready for when I get in the room. But you know, you could train a machine learning model to learn based on my locations, where it sees where I am, and based on my calendar, when I'm going to be in the room. And it could begin to predict the situation. You know, it could also predict, you know, how long it takes once it switches on for the room to get up to temperature, and use all this real-time data and this artificial AI or machine learning prediction to be able to then switch itself on and off when it needs to. And now you've got a digital model on the phone. It's connected to data, it's predicting, it's simulating, and it's controlling the real world. And I'd say at that point, that's a digital twin. Doesn't need to be complex, doesn't need to be a big system, but that's an example of what is a digital twin. It's got benefits because it could potentially save energy. It makes me more comfortable and those things. It saves me some time. So I think that's what I could think of as the simplest way to define a digital twin. And for me, there are these four key components there: the digital model, the sensor within the radiator to be able to get the real-time data, the control mechanism switching itself on and off, and the prediction. I think you need all those four things for it to be a digital twin.
So we're left with a comfortable smart garage based upon these four elements, which I love. This is a great starting point. I like that analogy. And it's physical and digital. Many of us think of a digital twin as just digital, but it's not. There's a physical element, and it's an interaction with the environment to make real-time predictive smart changes, whether they be statistically, geospatially, or a range of different factors. So that's this is a great starting point, a good foundation kind of to set the stage for what we're going to uncover and talk about next. But I think next, let's maybe kind of go a little bit further into what's relevant to the work that you're doing at PTV and Umovity, and specifically digital twins in transport slash mobility slash transportation, depending on what term we're using. In Europe, UK, or North America, we Americans say transportation, you'll say transport on this side of the Atlantic. But for the sake of this particular episode, what makes transport a good fit for a digital twin?
Well, I think what makes transport a good fit. It obviously transport is something that plays such a key role in all of our lives. It connects, you know, increasingly maybe we don't need to travel so much because we've got things like this. We've got Zoom. I didn't need to come to you for this podcast. We can do it online. But there is a still need for people to move between places. That's a key part of our lives. And the way that's provided is through transport. So anything you can do to transport to make it easier, smoother, more equitable, more accessible, essentially improves our lives. And the digital twin can essentially support with all of those things. Transport's a good candidate because it's already, in many cases, already gone through, but not in all cases. Gone through this digital transformation. So, thinking back to when I started my career as a transport modeler, the first transport model I built, I remember we had this huge pile of booklets of timetables. So for every bus route in the West Midlands, don't know how many there were, we'd have a separate paper copy of what that bus route was, and we would have to sit there at our computers and code them into the model kind of by hand. Nowadays, you don't need to do that. You've got live, you can just, I can in the UK go to the Department for Transport's website and download in digital format already all of the bus routes, all the bus lines, bus stops, even the live data feed about where the buses are. So transport's gone through this digital transformation already, and so it's already a key candidate for leveraging the benefits of a digital twin. And for our positioning in terms of Umovity, so I'll maybe get into that a little bit. So I mentioned I work with PTV Group, who specialize in that modeling and simulation piece. And you know, we model and predict mobility. So I tend to also broaden out transportation into mobility as well. You can do that at all kinds of different scales, whether you're modeling an individual junction because you want to advise the layout of that junction, what the signal timing plan should be, or you're modeling to support the layout of a rail station or a public transport interchange to make sure that the flow of people through a station is optimized. You've got the right number of escalators, right number of gates.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Or it could be to a city scale. We'll talk about City of York a little bit later. Or even a whole continent. So, you know, PTV has been involved in the model of creating a model of the European continent, you know, European Union. So all kinds of different scales. And those kind of models are used to support decision making of all those kinds of different kinds I mentioned. And about 4 years ago, PTV was combined with Econolite, so that's a company based in the US, to create a new brand called Umovity. So we'll talk about Umovity. It's the combination of PTV Group and Econolite. And what gets really exciting in the context of digital twins, in the combination of PTV and Econolite, is whereas PTV does this modeling and prediction, it's what we've been doing for nearly half a century, Econolite, for the same amount of time, if not more, has been specializing in kind of the real-time traffic management. So if you're thinking about the simple radiator example, the sensor, the equipment, the control of what's happening right now, that's what Econolite are doing with transportation. So you know, they're providing the technology and the hardware on the ground that is controlling the traffic signals and sensing traffic. And so we can bring together the sensors and the control with the modeling and the prediction to provide the full transport digital twin piece.
Maybe we'll just add on another kind of topic onto this, and then we can get on to the next subject I think we're going to cover here, which is around the case study in New York. But maybe I'd just be curious to know from your perspective, how has this evolution in digital twins impacted the work that PTV does, one related to kind of this synthesis of the acquisition of Econolite and the new Umovity brand, as well as some more traditional, let's say, modeling and planning techniques from a geospatial and a cartographic level vis-a-vis GIS, geographic information systems. So, to kind of put it more bluntly, you know, how has digital twins, how have they, let's say, expanded and improved upon more orthodox traditional GIS planning and modeling techniques that were birthed in the mid to late 60s, you know, in the US and whatnot. And how has that served to kind of fit into these different spatial use cases that you mentioned, whether it's a granular level of an escalator, an elevator, to, you know, pedestrian footfall, to, let's say, European continental wide modeling across the entire 27 member state unions. So how is this a natural evolution, and what are some of the challenges and opportunities? I know we're going to probably hit upon this towards the end of our discussion, but I just want to jump into it and layer in this interplay between GIS for those who don't know about this and digital twins, because there's a close connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see GIS as an important part of digital twins, because I think a GIS, if you're using GIS to bring together geospatial data sets and derive insights from them, that is essentially a digital model. So that's one of those key components. And you would use GIS to pull information together to be able to derive insights to typically on a longer term basis understand what is happening within a city. You know, where are the gaps in terms of accessibility, in terms of where people are living, where they work, where are there gaps in it, where in terms of where public transport provision is, where are there current issues in terms of traffic congestion, and what kind of options do we have to resolve that? And where I think the key difference is between just a digital model or GIS, and typically the things that the PTV have been doing for the last 40 years or so, is that connection with the live data. So whereas you might use a GIS or a digital model to explore what happens if we add a new station to a rail line where we want to promote park and ride into the city to encourage modal shift? You do that with typically historical data going back months, if not years, and the kind of predictions and forecasts you're making, because these are big, infrastructure investments you'd be talking about. You're looking forward 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. So the time horizon is very high. I think where what happens with digital twins is that you're really looking at the now and the short-term future and how you can make changes to the real world now. And that's kind of the key difference, and also the key challenge, because you need not just the digitization of what's out there now, but the digitization and the information about what is hap about kind of sorry about what you know. You need the live data feeds, essentially, the live sensors out there to tell you what's happening on the ground, to create that live mirror that you can then test things with, and do some prediction, say for the next 30 minutes, what's going to happen to traffic, to inform in the control room how we respond to this.
Yeah, that's a great point. So it's a complement, but it's different to a traditional GIS, which is more static, it's fixed, it's long range, it's more wedded to kind of traditional urban and town planning concepts. That's how it was birthed. And it's, of course, environmental monitoring and resource management, land use protection, that kind of stuff. And I think looking at digital twins as maybe a complement to enable decision makers as well as operators to make more real-time, short-term interventions and changes to their processes or to their, it could be related to fiscal, it could be related to operations, it could be emergency management. It covers the entire gamut. But the digital twin is essentially this interface between the digital and the physical, to ingest the data and to provide, let's say, what if analyses that are more, let's say, temporal based in a short term perspective. And why that matters is because this plays into the fluidity as well as the organic nature of cities and complex urban and built environments. So, I think, it's really part of perhaps only the strength that can benefit GIS and other types of cartographic and mapping tools from now going forward is to, let's say, kind of fuse these capabilities only because this is really the direction that clients, as well as municipalities, as well as other actors, PTOs, PTAs, and others who participate in urban transport planning and mobility demand now. So we're getting away from the analog to the digital. That could have been, maybe 1995, 2000, 2005. Now it's much more obviously towards machine learning, AI, real time, this merging of physical and digital, and the expectations of the client bases and other users, such as citizens and many other stakeholders in urban environments, to have the ability to interact with tools and technologies that provide a clearer picture that I don't want to say it's moving away from the specialist towards the generalist, because that is yet to be seen. But it, in a way, in my opinion, it sort of democratizes the process of it, though. It does democratize the process so that there is more ubiquity and access to information that is decision-based and actionable, whereas before it was held under lock and key 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And you would only have one specialist in one department behind a server, and you'd have to go to them to ask for a printed map. And guess who was one that was doing those maps? That was me. I was a GIS analyst, so I know this. I'm a cartographer. So I speak from this from experience as the data analyst. So I could see this through the transition of my own career, but also through these different technologies and concepts. So I went down that rabbit hole for a reason, only because to paint a picture of how digital twins fit to other technologies and how they're being used between the public and private sector, because I think that's important. It's not in a vacuum. We're in a bubble. There's a lot of other aspects that are kind of driving this shift, this transformation. I don't know if you have some thoughts on that, and we can maybe start talking about the use cases.
Yeah, maybe just a thought to wrap up that section. I completely agree. I think people expect nowadays to be able to get the information they want, whether it's in a search engine, they now expect an answer. Well, I'll put it in, some AI will give them an answer. It may be complete nonsense. It might be completely pretend, but then now people are getting an answer to their question. And so that democratization idea is important, and is also something that we recognize as well in the work that we're doing. Transport modeling is a very niche industry. It needs experts to do these things, and rightly so. But then it becomes quite siloed within organizations, and it takes some time, it takes expertise, and that can create some frustrations. And so what we're working to do is connect the experts with the non-experts and be able to open up that information. We're doing that across our sort of portfolio. So I completely agree that that is a trend.
Yeah, indeed. No, I think it serves both purposes, and this is certainly the expectation that organizations and decision makers are trying to bridge that gap. So with that, maybe let's kind of pivot to our next topic, which is specifically around a case study. So maybe you can shed some light for us on some specific work that you've been doing in the city of York in the north of England. In terms of York's transport digital twin project, as well as some key challenges and solutions that have been learned from this process.
So it's a project I was quite closely involved in, sort of leading from the PTV side, so I know it quite well. And it is an example of a transport digital twin that has been implemented. It is being used by the city, and we can see some real world benefits, but also a huge amount of potential for it going forward as well, particularly around those policy topics, which I guess we'll come to. So maybe to set the scene on this one, in terms of a transport digital twin, again, transport mobility is such a huge topic. You can imagine a digital twin around a bus system. So you've got your model of the bus system, where the buses are, how many people are on those buses. You might have information about traffic conditions. You can predict traffic conditions, when buses are going to arrive in a certain place, advise drivers of what's happening. You can sort of imagine in buses and taxi fleets and all kinds of areas where being able to predict the situation and automatically adapt the technology, adapt the infrastructure can provide benefits. The specific area that we looked at with City of York is around traffic signals, which is nice because it's also the area in which we have a great synergy between PTV and Econoline as well. So maybe for anybody that's not so familiar with how signals work, it could be quite interesting to kind of touch on that a little bit and where a digital twin could help to improve traffic signal operations. So if you imagine a basic traffic junction or intersection, it's signalized. You arrive at the stop line, you've got your signal heads, red, green, and they'll be connected to a box somewhere. So somewhere to the side of the junction, you'll see a cabinet, which has essentially some hardware in there, some software, and that is telling the signals what to do. So the most simple type of signal control is it's simply on a timer. So maybe every 60 seconds, it's alternating between providing sort of 25 seconds for one approach, 25 seconds for another approach, and then some time in between for safety. So that's the most simple thing. A bit like the radiator, you've got a control system, and it's doing things. You then get more advanced signal control when you're bringing in sensors and detection. So many people will have noticed, or you certainly will now, you'll start looking out for it. As you approach a junction, you might see these little squares or diamonds cut into the road as you're approaching the junction. Well, that is a sensor. That's detecting the presence of a vehicle. And then that is connected to the controller in the cabinet. And it's telling the program that's running there, okay, there are vehicles here now. So that feeds into the logic about, okay, when do I give green to a different approach? So now we've got sensors and we've got control. So that's a control system, just like the radiator, keeping the temperature in the room. And then there are all kinds of more advanced programs that can run, where essentially it's sensing where the vehicles are and then using that information to change what goes.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Green when. And that's something we're also involved in, is that kind of technology. That's a key part of Econolite's business. And more advanced aspects of that detection are available. So cutting things in the road is quite expensive, time consuming. You want to resurface something, you have to replace that. So we've got things like above ground detection and radar, but also really exciting ways of upgrading that technology, in particular because they're connected, so you can get access to the data. But anyway, you can have more advanced forms of how those signals are controlled. But what could be really interesting in the digital twin context is, say, on its own, it's a control system and it's got sensors. But what if you can bring in modeling and prediction to inform what that controller is doing? So you could say, if you could have a model of a corridor or of a city, and you're able to predict, okay, we expect there to be extra traffic flow coming down this way in the next 5 or 10 minutes, or we expect that we know that the buses are running late on this particular approach, change your objective, and we can change how the traffic signals are operating. Now we're in digital twin territory. And that's what we've been doing with the City of York. So maybe kind of go back to what the City of York were doing before, because that will help to understand what the benefits of this are, of having this kind of system as well. So before we began working together with the City of York and other partners as well, the way that they would manage the network in real time. So local authorities and cities and regions will tend to have a control room So there are people working in those control rooms who are responsible for keeping the traffic moving, essentially. And under normal conditions, it does it itself. You've got these control systems, they're just doing their job. But there will be times when something unusual happens, whether that's because you've got a special event on somewhere, there's a collision, or there's just more traffic than normal. When something happens, then those in the control room need to act on the network to try and resolve those issues. And the main tool that they have is changing what the signals are doing, because they're connected to the control room. They can say, okay, I'm going to change the plan now. So, maybe on this approach, because the traffic's building up more than normal, we're going to give them a bit more green time. That's the kind of activity that those in the control rooms are doing. But the way that they would know that there is an issue is essentially because a member of the public will call up and say, this junction is really bad, or a bus driver will message in and say, look, my bus is really late. This traffic's not normally here. And then when they're alerted to that kind of situation happening, they'll then look at it on CCTV and then begin to take their actions to resolve the issue. And those working control rooms are doing an amazing job. The challenge they have is they're critically under-resourced because of funding challenges. But also, that's quite a reactive way to deal with issues. And so, what City of York have been doing for quite a while now is investing in a digital transformation, but also exploring how they can use technology to make themselves more proactive and improve kind of movement of traffic through the city. And around 5 years ago, we began working with them to essentially build up a digital model of the whole city. So we've got a representation of all the roads. We've got the digital representation of all the traffic signals in there as well, the bus routes, how people normally move through the city. And then that's connected with sensor data. So we've got the digital model that's used for normal kind of planning things. But then combining that with sensors. So whether that's just traffic counters or cameras at junctions telling you how much traffic is flowing through or where the congestion is in the city at the moment, to provide that digital kind of mirror or a shadow of what's happening on the ground at the moment. And already that's a benefit to the city because they're not waiting for the phone call to know when something's happened, they need to deal with it, but they can see it. They can have alerts that says, look, this is unusual. You need to go and act on this now. So already that's a benefit. But with a digital model that we provided and it being a digital twin, there's also the capability to say, okay, so this is what's happening now based on what we know from the digital model and all the sensor data that's coming. We can actually roll that forward. We can play it forward, say half an hour ahead, to say, well, actually, because we've detected higher traffic on this corridor up here, we know that's going to get downstream towards the city in 15 minutes and going to cause an issue. So you can begin to use that prediction, but then also say, well, what do we do about that situation? Because how they would do it without the digital twin is just use their knowledge, their expertise to say, well, I know roughly I'm going to stick an extra few seconds of green here. Off we go. But actually, it might be that there are a range of possible things they could do. And they can actually test them in the model. So something's going to happen in the next 15 minutes, or it's happening now. But actually, there are, say, four, five, six different things we could do. Why don't we test them and see which one works best? And that's what we did. So we worked with York. So we did this last year as sort of a pilot, as a test of, if we take essentially the human out of the loop for this bit and replace it with a robot. So at the moment, they would sit there, make a decision, and implement it. Well, actually, what if the digital twin could take that decision for them? It can notice there's an issue. It can test a range of different options. It can say, that's better right now. We should do this. And then automatically press the button to change the signal plan. Essentially, that's what we did. We picked a location, we did a pilot, we ran a test, switch on, switch off. And really positive results. We see that the system is more able to dynamically adapt to situations than before. It's finding new solutions to things that they haven't necessarily thought of before. And it really is helping them to be proactive. And that's sort of the key benefits, really, of such a kind of digital twin.
Let's go a little deeper into this in terms of what are the outputs and what are the messages that are received. Let's say I am an operator with the City of York and I am participating in this pilot project. And I'm, let's say, kind of taken out of the loop, and the machine or the robot is presenting these different variations or these different suggestions. What would be expected of the operator in terms of, let's say, receiving this information to make actionable decisions? Are these text messages? Are they control, let's say, suggestions? Are they actual processes and kind of a different system of operations that are utilized by different roles in an organization so that they can basically take these different automated findings and use them in a way that can be experimented on a very limited pilot method, because ultimately this would want to be applied at scale across the entire city, York and others. So what is kind of the expectation, the process in terms of this interface between the machine and the human? What occurs?
Yeah. So the main form of communication that we had for this trial that we ran essentially is an email communication. So
Okay.
automatically, network monitoring officers will receive an email to say, okay, I, as the digital twin, have
So it's a
spotted this.
push notification. That's
Yeah.
via
Yeah.
email
Yeah.
or
Yeah.
SMS or whatever. Okay. That's one output of this digital twin pilot intervention. Okay. I want to paint a picture for the audience of what does this entail, basically,
Yeah.
beyond the terminology.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what we did here. But we also set this up very quickly, I should say. We did this in sort of 4 to 8 weeks once we had the digital twin up and running to do these kind of tests. And you could do this in many different ways. We picked an email, but it could be text messages. It could be a live dashboard, for example.
Could it
So
be a map? Could it
could
be
be
a
a map.
cartographic? Are we talking text? Are we talking geospatial? From my perspective, it seems like it could take many different forms, but I'm just curious what you guys were
Yeah.
seeing.
So, I mean, what they have in the control room is a live map. So,
Yes.
what they see is a live map of current traffic conditions and automatic alerts. So, there are certain key parts of the network, key corridors, key areas where if certain conditions go above a certain threshold, there's an alert that is both in terms of an email but also presented on this dashboard.
But this is outside of the digital twin. This is the status quo setup, right? In the traffic management interface.
This is the digital twin that
Oh, it
we're
is.
providing.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're able to provide that. And then it's this kind of automation piece on top is to then control or inform the control of the hardware on the ground that really sort of makes it the digital twin as well.
I see. Okay.
But what's also interesting is the ability to bring in other modes or essentially any other data into this process. So the way that one particular bit, it's a bit nerdy, but that's my background, so I'm going to go
No,
into
me too. We both are.
it. So, one of the really interesting parts of this, we set this up quickly, was how you score which test, how you score each test to decide which thing to recommend. So, in
Give
the
it a
case of what,
value, right?
yeah, exactly, because you need one thing to decide. Okay, this one's best. Recommend
It
this
has to be
one.
ranked, of course, yeah.
So, in the case of this test, we did it simply. We just said, well, compared to the baseline, we're going to take the average journey time improvement through this junction and then score them all and off we go. But what we can do, we have the data available, is bring in any other data feed into this to inform it. So you could have, I mentioned about buses, for example. If you know that the bus routes, and we do know that the bus routes coming through a particular corridor are currently behind schedule, then you can feed that information through to the scoring and say, actually, now we're going to weight these approaches more highly in our scoring. Or it could be that you've got pedestrian detection or cyclist detection. And it's actually on at the moment. The we really need to clear this junction of pedestrians and cyclists, and so we're actually going to reduce the green time to traffic overall and provide more red so we can clear that data, and that can feed into the scoring systems as well. There's a huge amount of flexibility to make these things, I say, policy sensitive. And you can imagine you have this kind of dashboard where you're saying, like, right now this is my policy goal. I want these are the weights for the different modes, and so this is how I'm going to weight each of how the junction is operating based on all this
Reduce
information.
congestion by 30%. Just throw that. That's one policy goal, maybe for a particular zone. Could be that's pretty standard in many European cities with SUMP planning, sustainable urban mobility planning. They usually have a congestion reduction and a decarbonization goal at the very top level. So it seems to me that that could quite seamlessly fit into these different outputs and these different scoring and ranking measures that are being implemented.
That's right. And then kind of looking at this sort of the future of digital twins, that's one of the ways in which this is exciting, because you don't need to have one digital twin of the whole thing necessarily. You can have a twin of the bus system, the taxi fleets, of cyclist movements throughout the city. But digital twins are designed in a way that they integrate, so you can communicate information between them, and then you really can combine all the different aspects of mobility into a single system.
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. Actually, I was going to propose, and you summed it up well, but moving away from the individual modalities more towards a multimodal, let's say heterogeneous composite picture of entire modes throughout the city and how a digital twin could facilitate these different types of movements based upon scoring, ranking, policy, procedures. A mixture of, let's say, anecdotal data, which would be the analog world, to the data-driven world that we're, let's say, kind of moving towards. Not to say that anecdotal data isn't important in listening to experts, but taking more, let's say, kind of real-time interventions. But again, based upon these, I would say, multitude of sensor types aligned with modalities is really the strength and the power of this type of concept and technology, because it aligns quite well with the policy goals of the deputy city mayor of mobility or the mobility director. So these are the key roles and personas in cities that are they have the power of the purse, they have the power of the spending authority, and they are making decisions to implement policies that are in the 20, 30, 40-year horizon. I believe UK still has them, even post-Brexit. Are the SUMP plans, but certainly on the mainland Europe, on the other side of the English Channel, there's over 256 SUMPs across Europe, each one of which has a strong emphasis and a policy goal towards multimodality and decarbonization in the transport sector. And tools and technology such as this only help, I use the term, now it's becoming cliche in this episode, but not just to democratize, but to raise awareness and provide more transparency of the current and near-term environment for decision makers, whether fiscally, operationally, or physically, to intervene and better plan and model for changes in the urban and built environment, because I think that's really key. And moving away from, not to criticize GIS, but more of the traditionalist, let's say, kind of snapshot, expert-driven mode to something that is a bit more multidisciplinary, that takes the expert, takes the non-experts, it takes the politicians, and it takes the citizens into this kind of, let's say, system of digital and physical is quite promising for long-range comprehensive transport and urban planning, of which we don't really have in the United States as much. We have more of a traditional urban and let's say transport planning methodology that is more siloed. You have a particular chapter that is focused on land use, a particular chapter that's focused on housing, infrastructure, economic development. Whereas here in Europe with the SUMP plan, it's all focused on the common thread of mobility. Mobility is that common thread that stitches all these different disparate elements together in, let's say, long-range urban development and planning. And I think that the digital twin coupled with more traditional techniques of GIS and, interfacing with the experts, that are using more, let's say, anecdotal methods. It's not a one size fits all. It's one of many that can help us really achieve our policy goals and implement those plans. So the plan is not just sitting on a shelf, whereas let's say a sump plan could have been implemented back before the pandemic. But if there was no implementation or no projects or no policies that have been set forth to align with those goals, then that let's say realization or the potential was not brought forth. So I think that this is a great step forward.
Yeah, we certainly think so. And one of the key benefits that the City of York themselves talk about is the evidence base, and it's being able to monitor not just the operations of what's happening, but be able to monitor what's happening over time, so they can, look back against their policy goals, the policy objectives, and understand where they are and where they need to improve. Because we tend not to. Without the digital twin, we don't have that evidence base. It's kind of hard to know where we are.
Anecdotal. Back to that
Yeah,
again. Yes.
absolutely. And yeah, this need to kind of bring together different, both the planning and the operations side, but also different modes. Because what I see within government local authorities as well is there it is siloed between different modes. You've got a roads organization or a department, and you've got public transport. But we need to bring that together. In Umovity, we call it dynamic multimodal network management. And that's the kind of each part of that is quite important. There's the dynamic part, which is referencing that it should be responsive to change. We should be able to use evidence to monitor what's happening and revise what we're doing. It's multimodal, which is clear. We need to bring things together. Mobility is becoming more and more multimodal, as I know, as things like MaaS and autonomous vehicles come along as well, that'll become even more prevalent. And management is important because it's not just managing now. The long-term policy, the long-term vision is crucial. That is critical. You still need the traditional way of doing things to explore the long term. But we need to bring that together with the operational so that we are all kind of moving in the same direction. And you mentioned transparency again. I think that's really critical because that could be one of the challenges with digital twins. If we start getting into the realm of, we're actually tracking where people are going, that's going to ring some alarm bells with certain people, and we get into privacy and security. It's going to be really important as we bring this technology forward that we're engaging with people to allow them to understand the benefits of what we're doing. We don't want sort of a repeat of the pushback against 15-minute cities and then that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Indeed. Well, yeah, some of the legal and legislative challenges related to privacy and the access to mobility data, resulted in a lawsuit, and it went to the federal court. I think it was a challenge to the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution of, basically the use of personal data that could be perhaps, let's say, translated into the hands of law enforcement. So there's a lot of challenge. I believe the lawsuit was dropped, but it's a very slippery slope in terms of perhaps maybe a city utilizing tools. In the case of LA, it was interesting because it was more of kind of looking at different opportunities to let's say receive modalities of users and present kind of a composite picture to make better decision making. But the challenge to that, of course, was that many citizens felt like they were being treated as beta testers unknowingly. So, there's ethical and legal challenges that we must consider. This is a bit more unique to the United States because there's no GDPR policy in the US. It's all governed by state and local, legislation, which is a very balkanized patchwork. Many jurisdictions don't have any data privacy laws on the books. So it's a different let's say landscape here in Europe, perhaps in the UK as well too, but something that we must consider in terms of putting cities, citizens, and the people first with whatever types of tools that we utilize for the public benefit, for the Commonwealth. the Commonwealth, right? The Commons. So, with that, maybe let's kind of wrap things up with some final thoughts on what are your views and the look ahead for digital twins and cities and transport, maybe in the next 3 to 5 years.
So I think it's think about where to start and having a vision for where you want to get to. So with a digital twin, it starts with the digital part of that. You need to have a digital transformation. You need to be able to create a model of all the things that you may want to control, but also the key parts of that. Yeah, and you need to have the vision. So what is it that we want this digital twin to do? 'Cause it's so broad a topic. So understanding what data do we have, what assets do we have, what is important, and then investing up front. The City of York did this very well. They invested in the infrastructure that provided the live data feeds about, okay, there's this much traffic on this part of the network and over here and over here. And yeah, have the vision, digital sort of first, invest in the kind of the live data, the live sensors. And then you can begin to integrate and really begin to explore the benefits of a digital twin, both in terms of being more efficient, because you can be far more efficient. You can deal with budget issues as well. It might be an investment up front, but with resourcing being such a challenge, you can begin to take some of the burden off people and leverage a digital twin to do some of those tasks and potentially explore things that you weren't even aware of. You can be more resilient because you can respond and react to things that you hadn't thought of, the unexpected with tools like prediction and the policy part as well, because we can begin to really bring together all that policy work that goes on in the strategic piece and bringing it into the real-time operation as well.
I'm really excited about the possibility. Thank you, Michael, for sharing that. Specifically, what piques my interest is around the alignment of the fiscal nature of the challenging budgetary environment of cities and aligning with their capital programming, as well as their ability to deliver more nuanced, let's say, green multimodal infrastructure in complex urban environments. With fewer resources, but utilizing technologies that help them focus on what matters, kind of the 80-20 rule, as we Americans say. So I think that that's really exciting in terms of digital twins. So getting more with less, not less digital twinless, but less, let's say, cumbersome investments that yield lower results. I think that that's a very promising aspect. You mentioned operations too. But also in terms of policy, though, I keep fixating on this, so everyone's probably quite used to me hearing this as an urban planner. But really, that seamless alignment with policy and successful implementation of policy, and moving away from anecdotal to data-driven and results-driven, as you mentioned, so that we have the proof, we have the proof, we have the numbers, and we have the results that we can iterate over time in an agile fashion. We don't have to be too fixated or too let's say monolithic, but we can use these results and make surgical changes to city environments in a way that benefits all. And it's just really a smart way of conducting government and doing business. So it really helps out between the public sector, the private sector, and the Commonwealth of citizens. So I think that these are some of the real exciting opportunities of utilizing these technologies and interventions, such as the work that you're doing at PTV and Umovity, to help plan and deliver a better, more equitable, greener city environment, integrating transport and mobility as that common thread. So, yeah, I think that there's more work to be done, but we're seeing the promise already starting to yield benefits, which is great to see.
Absolutely. The future's bright.
Yes. So, Michael, I just want to thank you so much for your time. It's been a sincere pleasure to have you join our episode today. We learned so much from your perspectives. It's really exciting to hear about your work in the north of England, specifically in New York, as well as other kind of communities across Europe and other areas. And really, it's great to hear about your background professionally and personally. And just wanted to again, once again, thank you. And then also, I want to thank PTV Group, Umovity, and Econolite for sponsoring this episode. about the use of digital twins in transport. And for everyone, please stay tuned for our next webinar panel, where we're going to be talking about Vision Zero and the implementations, as well as kind of promises of delivering on Vision Zero policies between North America, Europe, and other regions. And that will be at the end of October. That will also be sponsored by PTV, and that will be in a webinar format. So stay tuned on that. But once again, thanks, Michael, for joining us. It's been a real pleasure having you today.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. That's great.